thought we have been meeting them quite some time. We even went to their offices. But it's fine. My name is Kaya Makatla, the chair of this committee, this portfolio committee for public enterprises, sitting here with the secretary of the committee, Dichang.
Next to me is Honorable Shabalala. I'm a 1 second spokesperson for her. I'm Honorable Kwanazi. Thank you.
I'm sorry, Chair, that was not part of the office visit. Thank you.
Dora Dlamini, member of the Buffalo Committee.
I'm Natasha Mazzoni.
Apologies, Chair. Khatazo Tlakudi, acting teacher.
Thank you, Chair Phumulo, Deputy Minister, Public Enterprises. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Ashok Mursa, I'm a non-executive director. I'm standing in for the chairperson of the
Congress. Afternoon, honorable members. I'm Zoux Ramasia, acting CEO, SAA.
Lebohanti Kani, Minister, Public Enterprises.
Good morning, my name is Tladi Tladi, South African Airways.
Good morning, Chair, and honorable members. My name is Busumzi Pikoli, Chief Legal Risk and Compliance, SA.
Good morning, Chair and honorable members. My name is Dion Fredericks, Interim CFO.
Good morning, Chairperson. Honourable members, my name is Noni Mashika. I'm from the DPE conducting oversight on state-owned airlines.
Sanbonani Nogbonga Mlalose, DPE.
Good morning. Vumla Maestri, SAA.
Already welcomed everybody. Can you take us from? Or do you have to start with the Deputy Minister?
No, thank you, Chair. No, thanks, Chair.
You want to manage?
The team is going to, ably led, is going to take us through the details, but just a few remarks from the shareholder perspective as we are representing the shareholder. It's common cause, Chair, that we, over the recent period, been seized with a number of challenges for which different sorts of interventions have been called upon, with the shareholder predominantly having to look at the recapitalization of the entity. In that respect, this has been called upon because some of the loans that the entity has had to undertake were due and that they needed then to be interventions. You would recall, Chair, that in February this year, the Minister of Finance did announce a capitalization of about 5 billion rand, which was meant to assist with repayment of such maturing bonds, as well as, of course, a contribution towards the operational costs that were required. We have constantly, as the state, got to ensure that we improve the value of the assets that are under our custodianship. In respect of that, SAA has had to really look at improving the business efficiency, of course, focusing as well on the programs that are aimed at meeting the national economic and social objectives as outlined in their mandate. One of the major activities has been the turnaround process that not only focused on the immediate stability of the entity, but also its long-term sustainability. Of course, what remains critical is in the business cycle of the airline is financial recovery, as well as enhancing the shareholder value. We have then in that regard really seen the implementation of the accelerated long-term turnaround plan, which I'm sure the team will speak in detail about. Whilst the situation might look very depressed, but certainly some of the measures, the interventions that have been made are already having some good signs which are a cause for hope looking to the future. For instance, some of the achievements over the period, particularly from 2018, would have been a forging of partnership with another international firm, Rolls-Royce, that saw the an opening of an engine storage facility in the country that was achieved through collaboration in the National Industrial Participation Program. The Technical Service SA Technical has provided a site, and in that we're able to see an international partner coming to Sedlier to service the needs of the aviation sector beyond just SAA, which is something very positive going forward. Also in the year, particularly 18-19, the airline, through the implementation of the turnaround, the accelerated turnaround program, we have been able to record reduced losses in some of the route networks, which are things coming out of the implementation of that program. Of course, the flagship continues, particularly SAA in partnership with IATA, introducing first ever women in aviation leadership development diploma, the first of its kind. I think transformation in the sector is one of the things that need to be championed, and part of our overall objectives is also to see presence in that space. So these are some of the positive things. Of course, I think the team will then be able to take us through the state of well-being of the organization, what it is doing. I was merely just doing an introduction. Thank you very much. Shall I call you acting chair? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, DM. Chair, we have four of us who are going to present.
Apologies. I think the agenda is before us, but I thought we'll go straight to the topic that the acting CEO will address. CEO, just setting the scene.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, honourable members. Our setting scene, it will be really talking about the investment case of South African Airways, which is the accelerated long turnaround strategy. South African Airways, I think around 2013, we started with a turnaround strategy, the board, the staff members, and it was validated by various reputable companies like McKinsey, Deloitte, Mott and McDonald. Of course, when we were in 2016, it was verified by CBRE as well. So we did implement, but not everything was really implemented to the fullest. because of both internal and external circumstances. But I'll only mention, highlight just the two of them, under internal and external. I'll talk about the reason of, because you want to know why did we fully implement the plan. It's because of the discontinuity and disruption at leadership level, and as well leading to erosion of skills. And most particularly, we have cumbersome approval processes that affects us really to implement our strategy as fast as we can, and that affects the cost structure of the organization, becomes unsustainable. If we talk about the external circumstances, we'll talk about the fuel and currency fluctuation. We'll talk about as well the challenges in the environment that you operate in, because the landscape changes all the time, and of course we need to have skills to be able, or people with enough acumen, commercial acumen, to be able to ensure that the plan is being delivered. What have you done about it? What we have done recently, we have assembled through the help of the shareholder, the what we call board implementation committee, as well as the joint implementation committee. What do they do? The board implementation committee is the three board members and three executive managers. We sit together, we look at all the gaps, at what is it that was supposed to be implemented in the plan, what's not implemented. So basically, the plan itself, the long turnaround strategy, remains relevant. Now, the difference is that we want to take away the cumbersome approval processes, and we also want to ensure that the strategy on itself, it has the correct capabilities to ensure that we are able to turn around and make the differences. Basically, get the revenue that SAA requires to sustain itself, and also deal with the cost structure of SAA. So that's what the board implementation committee does. We meet weekly, and when we meet weekly, we look at the decisions that we need to be doing to turn the fortunes of the SAA around, so that the reliance on the on external, on the government, you know, it diminishes. Then we have a JIC. JIC is the bond, is the joint implementation committee. Where do they fit in? It's the same BC members, and then we have augmented them with the people from the shareholder. So what it deals with, it deals with two things as well: acceleration of the implementation plan. In all our plans, you'll find that, as I already mentioned, that there's a cumbersome of implementation. So the processes of implementation, the JIC is dealing with that. So decisions that would have ordinarily taken 6 months or 3 months, those decisions, 3 months in the role, have been done already, have been achieved, and they have been implemented. So that's it. Basically, we have looked at ourselves. We've looked at what has stopped us from implementing the strategy, and we're dealing exactly with that. Now, talking about skills that we need to be putting on the company so that we are able to implement the plan, we have employed a CEO at Technical. We have also employed the head or the chief commercial officer, as well as the chief legal and compliance, which is Mr. Piccoli here behind me. So we're boosting the ESCO so that we're able to attend holistically to the plan itself, in order to deal with every other things that are actually making us not to move forward, like addressing governance challenges. It's one of the things that we're doing. Advancing the developmental mandate is what we're required to be doing. So that's mainly the things that we're dealing with. Now, if you've got the capability that you need for you to implement, we are able to respond as quickly as you can, especially when the changes happen because we're in a highly competitive environment, whereby if you just sit back, or if you don't have the correct capability, you are not able to respond. For instance, if I can make an example, on the domestic scenario. On the domestic, there's a lot of competition, there's a lot of capacity. Now, if you don't have people who are trading, who understand the environment, to in order to deal with the circumstances or plan ahead before even competition comes in, you are always going to lag behind and be reactive. So we're trying to close that gap by introducing the skills that are well known in the industry, that knows how to deal with that. And again, even on the regional, so far we're doing well, but of course you can't do the same thing and think that the competition is not watching you. That's why we introduce skills to assist us with that. And on the international, we've got the ME4 airlines, that the Middle East airline, that have come in and they've flooded the market. And flooding the market talks to the yields or the pricing, because it means it affects the whole pricing structure. What you used to get maybe in the previous year changes, especially when there's competition. So all that needs to have people who are able to trade and plan ahead and be able to deal with the competition. So that is what we're dealing with currently. So basically, the board implementation committee as well as the joint implementation committee are really assisting the airline to turn our fortunes so that the reliance on the government is less and we are able to make our own money in order to sustain the company on its own. Thank you.
Thank you, Acting CEO. I think just maybe, Chair, just to point out one of the matters that was raised by Zix Ramasia was just the competition in the market and the huge capacity that's available and the impact it's had on average revenue generated. So the sales value of a similar flight a year ago yielded a better result than what it currently yields, and that is the dynamic in which SAA operates. In. Chair, I'm going to talk to you around the various boards and board committees. We have an MOI. It provides for a maximum of 15 directors. We currently only have 9 directors, 2 of whom are the executive directors. We think the board needs to be supplemented. There are ongoing discussions with the shareholder. There is a need to ensure that that we have additional board members appointed as soon as possible. We also have 2 subsidiaries of note, Airships and SAA Technical. On each of those, the existing directors serve on those subsidiary boards. And the board committees that I established, which I will talk to you about now, the audit and risk and all the other committees, serve the subsidiaries. However, Mango has its own audit and risk committee and has its own governance structure. Chair, I thought I'll just give you a very high-level overview of the various committees. We have a finance and investment committee, FinCo. It's chaired by Martin Kingston, who is a non-executive director. FinCo has a number of objectives. It looks at procurement. It looks at the shareholder compact. Looks at the corporate plan, and all of these are reviewed before it goes to the shareholder. It also looks at some of the risks in foreign exchange, in oil price hedging. We really don't have the funds to have a hedging policy in place that is effective. So we are limited in terms of our capital that's available, but we do in fact have a strong oversight over. Over the key financial issues. We also look at the various funding and solvency implications for the airline. There's continuous engagement with the shareholder around the level of recapitalization. There are ongoing discussions with banks and with funders in terms of loans and loans that become due, and that is all the responsibility of the Finance and Investment Committee. We then have the Long-Term Turnaround Strategy Committee, Chair, and that Zux touched briefly on. There was a view that a lot of the objectives weren't receiving the necessary attention, and there was a need to see some level of acceleration, and that was then achieved through the implementation of, or the setting up of an interim committee called the Board Implementation Committee, and I'll talk to you about that entity in a short while. But the long-term turnaround strategy looks at a number of things. There's oversight over route, fleet, alliance, co-chairs, and it has a number of objectives that it addresses. And then we have the REMCO, and the REMCO assists the board in the discharge of its duties and responsibilities in relation to matters dealing with remuneration policies and practices for executives. It looks at company's remuneration policies and ensures that it's aligned with the company's strategy, and it makes recommendations to the board on executive remuneration, on HR policies, on incentive schemes, and on superannuation arrangements. Chairman, we then have a SECCO, or Social Ethics and Governance Committee. I omitted to mention that the Long-Term Turnaround Strategy Committee is chaired by Martin Kingston. Until recently, REMCO was chaired by Tendeka Mgoduso. Tendeka is now the acting chair of the board, so her role is now temporarily occupied by Martin. The Social Ethics and Governance Committee is chaired by Jeff Rothschild. It has a number of duties which are outlined over there. It's ensuring the management of ethics, ensuring that broad-based black economic empowerment and environmental health and safety matters are brought to its attention, ensures that we have a good corporate citizenship outcome. And then we have the Audit and Risk Committee, and I chair the Audit and Risk Committee. Perform the duties that's described in the Companies Act and in the Treasury regulations. We provide oversight over the financial asset and investment management of the company and also over the risk management practices of the company. Chairman, then we have the Board Implementation Committee, and Zips Ramasia, the acting CEO, did in fact talk about this, but this is specifically formed to ensure, and it's, I must tell you, it's something that receives enormously strong attention from the board, so much so that this meeting is held weekly and all decision-making is tracked, all important matters are brought to the attention of the Board Implementation Committee to ensure that we don't have a continuous delay in getting to decisions and outcomes that are necessary for a rapid movement away from our current situation. And then we have a board forensic task team, and the board forensic task team is to ensure that all matters that are the subject of an investigation, we've had a number of forensic investigations, are given attention, that the matter is closely monitored, that there's traction in terms of the movement around what is the action that is required to prosecute matters that that have been identified as potentially fraudulent. I think that would, I suppose there are a whole lot of KPIs which are detailed, and they're quite detailed in terms of what the shareholder compact has, what we've submitted from the company to the shareholder, and I think it goes over several pages. I don't intend taking you through all of those, but it is there, and if there are any questions, we can address it during question time. Chair, with your permission, then, I'm going to hand over to Advocate Vusi Piccoli, who will deal with the matters dealing with fraud and corruption.
Thank you, Chair, and members of the committee. Well, there have been quite a number of forensic investigations that were commissioned by the previous and current board. There used to be a situation where there was a proliferation of investigations within the group that were not coordinated nor consolidated. So there was a need then to also establish a forensic investigation department in July 2018. And prior to the establishment of such department, all matters were referred to the chief audit executive. So what is happening now is that these matters that were referred to the Hawks for further criminal investigations were actually not being attended to. So we're to resuscitate those matters to ensure that the dockets will find their way to court. Currently, we have 9 matters that are with the Hawks. Of those matters, we've been able to convert some of the inquiries into actual case dockets so that the matters can then be taken to the NPA for purposes of taking a decision. We have four matters that are still at an inquiry stage, which means that they have not yet been converted into case dockets. We are supplying the Hawks with further information that will enable them to convert them into dockets. We actually have two decision dockets that are with the NPA, meaning that insofar as the criminal investigations are concerned, those have been completed. It's a matter for the NPA to take a decision based on the quality of those two dockets, whether there's sufficient evidence for the NPA to proceed with prosecutions. What we've been able to do is to forge closer links and collaboration with the Hawks in terms of supplying whatever outstanding investigations. And then we've been able to work closely as well with the NPA with the view of NPA sending several of their units to look at all the 9 forensic investigation reports to make sure that nobody escapes the net, because we're dealing with organized crime syndicates that are operating, and we want to make sure that we uncover all those organized crime syndicates that are operating there. We've been able to successfully have discussions with the NPA, and we've got several units from the NPA who are evaluating the evidential value of those forensic investigation reports. We have in place units from the organized crime within the NPA, a unit from the specialized commercial crimes, a unit from the tax within the NPA, as well as the asset forfeiture unit. Now, I want to make sure that you are able to deal with the entirety of the criminal enterprise that exists within our environment. Typically, what we're experiencing or going through in terms of the fraud and corruption that is being experienced currently at the NPA, one, this relates more to procurement fraud, both at SART and within the NPA itself, SART being the South African technical that maintains repairs and services, you know, the aircraft. We are experiencing a loss of or theft of aircraft component parts. We are experiencing a theft of your ULDs. Those are the utility loading devices. We are satisfied that we are making good progress. But of course, the problem that we have also is that the capacity within the Hawks has sort of been eroded. And also the capacity within the NPA. And both of these institutions are critical for us to be able to have successful prosecutions. We've also dealt with a number of internal hearings within, though of course internal hearings do not necessarily fall within the work of the forensic investigations. But insofar as they relate to matters which might have been referred for criminal investigations, we also then attend to those matters. Thus far, as we can see, the figure stands as 29 employees were subjected to hearings, and 9 of them have been dismissed. 15 employees received final written warnings, 2 have resigned on their own, and there are 3 pending matters. Let me also state that even those who might have resigned on their own does not mean that they are free, because we'll be able to pursue them, especially if they are connected to crimes. And then also we'll put in place a system whereby we'll be able to recover whatever losses that SAA has suffered as a result of the malfeasance that has been taking place over a number of years. Some of these matters have also then, people have challenged some of our decisions in terms of dismissals and suspensions. Up until now, the CCMA has been able to confirm some of the dismissals, 3, and then the other pending matters at the CCMA, 5 matters, and there are 2 matters. Also, in the process of preparing our own submission to the Zondo Commission, which will be led by board members and the CEO. And then also we've brought in place the SIU to look at about 84 questionable contracts within SAA. We are in the last stages of finalizing the presidential proclamation, which will then enable the SIU to delve deeper into some of the contracts to make sure then that you are able to deal with these matters effectively. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I'm now going to hand over to Dion. Dion's going to just cover certain aspects that we might not have communicated around what the current financial position is, where it's relevant, and then he would talk about the developmental mandate.
Honourable Chair, honourable members of the committee, thanks for the opportunity. I think it's important just to start off with the current operating environment. I think everybody has experienced it. We've seen on the JSE significant impact because of the benign economic environment. And SAA is not immune to it at the end of the day. We've also seen that customers' requirements has changed, where previously people internationally would fly first business class. The first class passengers is moving to business. Business is moving to premier economy. And as such, it's becoming a very price-sensitive environment. SAA need to adapt to this, and that's the process that we're busy doing now. If you look, reference was made to our fleet. Our fleet in future will have premier economy, less business class. As you know, we are a full service carrier. Unfortunately, the market has changed, and if you don't adapt, you will be challenged. And the market has adapted to such an extent that customers want to select which class they fly. Do they want priority access? Do they want food on the flight? And we need to adapt, and that's the process that we're going through now. We've also seen pricing pressures. So suddenly customers are very price focused. To give you just a view, and this is stats from IATA in dollar terms globally, the average price from January to May last year has reduced by on average 12%. The passengers unfortunately has just increased 2%. If you just take simple math, it means before you can achieve what you achieved the previous year, you're 10% behind. As a result of that, we have seen significant pressure on our revenues, and that's why we starting with certain specific initiatives to address that. I'm just going to highlight a few to give you some flavor, and that is in terms of, and some of you will be happy to hear, additional flights within the domestic and regional market. We've identified certain areas where there's demand for it. We've also optimizing and reducing certain flights, specifically regionally. We're looking at all the flights that's not profitable and reduce that. We've done that with the London flight, where we had previously 2 flights, 50% capacity. Now that flight is profitable, and that's what we're addressing at this stage. You would have seen that we're also in the market for 350s. That will go on the New York route. That will save us, reduce the losses on that route by at least $200 million. And then also line with pricing. You would have seen Comair's result yesterday, although they make a big thing with a fine that we've received. But if you look at the actual performance, they've actually 82, their profitability before tax have reduced by 82%. And just gives you an indication of the challenges that we have in the market.
That is just some of the things. There's many other things that we initiate. On the cost side, we are doing exactly the same, only filling critical positions, stop all discretionary spend, limit duty travel, limit or not approving conferences. So all non-discretionary spend has been stopped from that perspective. We've also started classifying the expenses in what is fixed, what is semi-variable, and what's variable. Variable will move with the revenue, but making sure that our semi-variable and variable cost is actually what we need to address. We've started with fleet extensions. We'll see some of those benefits coming through in October, November. On a yearly basis, that's around 140 million. We have also started with space optimization, non-core assets that we're selling to make sure that we address that specifically. The second part, Chair, that I would like to address is cash. Cash is king, so there's a key focus on cash, making sure that we limit our cash. So we're increasing our repatriation from our foreign countries specifically. We have also busy renegotiating terms on deposits specifically, seeing that the shareholder has provide capital injection into the organization, and as such we will focus further on that. We're accelerating the sale of non-core assets as well as the property side, those assets that we don't require, and also considering sale and lease back. We're also in discussion with our lenders at this stage in terms of we still require additional 2 billion to complete our funding for this year, but we will, all these other initiatives that I indicated may reduce that requirement. So there's a key focus, and ultimately how do we increase revenues and reduce costs and put into place the requirement efficiency to assist this. Happy to say, as the colleagues have indicated, SART, which were one of the big challenges because of aircraft is not available, with the appointment of the new CEO, we've seen significant improvement. To such extent, we planned in January and February to outsource 2 wide bodies. We may not do that, which means we're returning to normal, and if we can get that in place, then we will also be able to finalize that. So those are just some of the initiatives, Chair.
By the way, your time is up. You can just summarize.
I think we've covered everything we've tried to be as brief as possible, but tried to send most of the important messages through. And if there's any area that we haven't covered, we'd be happy to address the same questions. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable members, at the presentation, again, you'll have to engage on note hands. Honourable Mazo, Mkwanazi, Lamini, accordingly.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, I was just going through my notes and asking a researcher of mine to go through my file, and if I'm not mistaken, this will be the 14th turnaround strategy that I've been privy to in public enterprise, and I certainly hope that it's the lucky number 13th. Chair, it's also the 9th board that I've worked with, so that gives you an indication of the massive challenges that face the airline as we are at the moment. But, Chair, there's certain questions that have always been asked and the public asks, which we were never told because we now know the extent to which state capture affected our national carrier. It was probably, I remember once going to SAA and having a staff member call me aside and say that working at SAA was probably the saddest experience of their lives, because the pilots were outstanding. And I've said it once, I'll say it a million times over. Our pilots are the best in the world, and we are so lucky to have them. and they have stuck through with us through thick and thin, and they should always be applauded for always having pride in working for SAA, even when things were at their very lowest. And staff members took such pride in working for SAA, but they had this board that was causing them endless problems and such embarrassment, but they were still smiling for customers, hoping to fly the South African flag high for us, and they were doing such a good job. And this particular employee took me aside and said, you know, there's things that we want to know, even us. And when you go to Parliament, ask these questions for us. And we did. And at the time, the chairperson was Mr. Dumayeni. Now, I mean, I've laid criminal charges against Mr. Dumayeni. Many people have laid charges against her. And I know that Advocate Pikoli can't disclose information because I can't disclose information about my cases. It's sensitive. It's obviously that kind of information can't come out. But there were things that happened under that particular watch which we can discuss in our oversight here. And one of them, I can't help think, is perhaps the reason we now have this merger between Mango, SAA, and SA Express. Because while they operate under the same mother body, so to speak, Mango Airline has always had its own board, it's always had its own financial sheet. And Chair, I'm completely open to correction, but as far as I know, Mango has never approached government for a bailout, and they have never reached financial crisis situation. And one of the things that concerns me greatly is the fact that already years ago we were discussing, well, not years ago, but a couple of years ago, we were discussing the A340-600 airlines aircraft. And at the time, it had been brought to our attention that the MODs had not been purchased for these airlines. For these aircraft, sorry, I keep saying airliner, I mean aircraft. And the line for this aircraft is now closed. You cannot purchase these MODs. Now, these aircraft, because of the long fuselage, they require the MODs to be changed at limit when it reaches its limit so that it can continue flying. And it's this particular aircraft that has been removed from service and will be removed from service and will be replaced by Mango. Now, it might seem irrelevant in the greater scheme of things. I don't think it's irrelevant because I think that such dereliction of duty needs to be taken up very strongly by this board, because when Mr. Dumayeni was here, Parliament, this committee, Treasury pronounced her as a delinquent chairperson. Parliament issued a summons against Mr. Dumayeni for not appearing upon a parliamentary request. And these are things that we need answers to, Chair, and the South African public needs answers to. Chair, in 2015, Mr. Nico Bezuidenhout, who was the chairperson of Mango and had been brought over to SAA to assist with another turnaround strategy, went to Paris to sign a co-chair deal with Emirates Airlines, which at the time would have seen the income and a sort of cash injection of just over 2 billion rand because of this co-chair. And it's in the public domain, so nothing that we're saying here isn't in the public domain. Mr. Nico Bezuidenhout received a midnight telephone call instructing him not to conclude that co-chair deal with Emirates because Mr. Dumayeni had called in a favor with President Jacob Zuma. Now, these are issues that this board has to grapple with. And this board needs to tell us these are issues that are being dealt with. Now, I see that we have a new co-chair agreement, an increased co-chair agreement with Emirates, as well as we continue with Iberia, we continue with American Airlines. But certainly, given the state of affairs, and I hear what the CFO is saying, and I'm one of the people that looks very, when I travel abroad, I look very strongly at, do I want food on the plane? Do I want extra baggage? And I often ask myself the question, I mean, you know, should people be allowed to take two bags on when I'm taking hand luggage on? I ask these questions too. Are we looking at expanding even more? Now, I don't want people to jump down my throat and immediately say I'm obsessed with privatization, but I am one of the proponents in looking at least semi-privatizing our airlines. And I want to know if we're looking, so as to save our country's economy, are we looking at extended, not only code sharing, but perhaps actual fiscal, financial sharing of SAA going forward, given the horrendous past that we come from? And I mean, I applaud this board for taking on what they're taking on, because it is not something easy. And Advocate Pokoli, if you have ever had your work cut out for you, it is now. Because the entire country is looking at SAA, and most especially Advocate Pokoli, to hold those who put our country in this precarious position to book. Because quite frankly, when you ignore a summons of Parliament, it shows how little regard you have, not only for the rule of law, but for the South African people as a whole. So, Chair, firstly, I want to say, I think that this is probably the most extensively detailed report from SAA I certainly have ever received as a member on this committee. I think all the sores and boils and illnesses are laid open for us, and I appreciate that. It's not usual that we see the problems as they are. But please understand where I come from. I have seen promise of a turnaround 13 times, and it is yet to realize. So I'm undeniably skeptical. I don't know, and this board must tell me, I don't know if it is remotely possible, even with a bailout from government, for the airline to be able to turn itself around without an injection of a private partner. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. Allow me to just focus on what is being presented today. If I'm trying to be overboard, please just do your job. I will only focus on today's presentation. I appreciate the presentation from the SAA, Deputy Minister, and the Acting DG Public Enterprise. Chair, I only have four questions. One is, Ms. Zooks, I get your name correctly, ne? Okay. In your presentation, you say you're working on the issue of the company to be able to have self-sufficient. Can you take me through and to take me through and give me confidence on your time frames and your plans in delivering that? Why I'm asking that is that I don't want to lose the focus of why I'm here. Why I'm here is I'm representing the South Africans on behalf of I'm representing the South Africans, and I'm here with a ticket of the African National Congress, and one of the resolutions of the African National Congress National Conference is that we must use SOEs for the economic development, inclusive growth, and job creation. So if you can take me through to say this company will be self-sufficient and be able to deliver on those on those resolutions, because that's a mandate that I have. Two, when you talk about your, I think it's in after 30 or 32, Mr. Pekon, you talk about the dealing with fraud and corruption. Do you have, as a board, a risk management plan in place to say what is it that we can do to be proactive, to avoid what has been happening and to identify the risk or to identify before we go to cases and stuff, because I believe prevention is better than cure, and it's much cheaper. On the case reported, I think it's in that light that you are on the cases reported. Are there any recoveries that you are recovering, and what is it that is what are those recoveries are assisting the company towards its self-sufficient and going forward? To the acting chair of the board, in the summary of your report, I think it's bullet 3, you said despite the current state, there's an investment case for government to continue to support SAA. Why? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I got only one questions. What is your plan to face your competitors to get the lowest price of fuel? Because on the presentation you say the fuel is very high prices. And the second one is, please tell us about the 84 contract as a high risk. How is it going to affect the company? Thank you.
Thanks, Jefferson. Let's appreciate the work that has been put in, especially in the report. I think it's quite comprehensive. In fact, as a matter of fact, because I'm here, I must ask a question, so I'm going to ask. But I think the report covers what one wanted to see. Advocate Pikoli, I think what I'll move for the committee is that as soon as the forensic unit starts with the work and there's a bit of movement, is that would appreciate time to time so that Parliament, you don't wait for Parliament to call you to keep on updating Parliament with relevant, especially issues of recovery, what we're saving, so that we don't rely on media and what comes out and headlines, and we wait for Advocate Gladi Gladi to communicate or on TV and all of that. So I think it's important when serious uncoveries or discoveries are done that we update. But just to say to the committee, I think it's also important that, Chair, we will have to consider perhaps in another term that we call a meeting with the NPA, you know, the justice, the NPA. SIU might not even be able to help us because they submit proclamations to the president. But the NPA, the HOG, so that all of them begin to tell us their own capacity and the constraints, it will be good and well for us to refer matters. But if they're not going to receive the necessary attention, advocately, your work becomes constrained. You can only be able to assist insofar as your own employees, what you can chase, but other matters might need this committee to have whether joint meetings with another committee of justice to consider those matters. On just slight, a smaller issue on the HR matters, there's unskilled person there of 00, so. And it says it's Africans, it's four people. So can you tell us what you're doing about it? I mean, for me, it sounds a bit bad. You are happy we've got an unskilled person. What do they do? Acting chairperson of the board, I'm honestly a bit tender back on the committees that are there of the boards. You know, if these committees were really efficient, I don't understand why did we arrive here. It's unfortunate we have to ask this question, but I don't understand why did we arrive here. You've got board committees that deals with Route Fleet Alliance funders, REMCO policies, that's duties to check practices, executive enumeration, evaluation of arrangements, issues of this procurement, but yet we find ourselves here. what are we doing that is not? And you check all these boards and these committees. These are highly qualified, skilled persons. We're no longer talking to the unskilled or people that you just promote. I don't know, Chairperson. This one, in fact, I don't think I would want an answer, honestly. Because we're putting people capacity, highly skilled, high echelons, to expect them to oversee these things, and we find ourselves in this mess. So for now, it's just for processing. We observe the board and the work that they need to put in, trying to correct and reshift. And so we can only give you the opportunity. But the next term, we need to do things differently and start to interact with you differently and have a slight meeting with the board, only the board, and really begin to scrutinize and understand their work so that we don't have the 15 board or Honorable Manzoni or the 16 or the 17, but just this board in our term of office. Let us be able to have a close relations and understanding with the type of work that they have. But we welcome the turnaround strategy. Thanks.
Thank you. Before you come in, Honorable Deputy Minister, I also would like to appreciate this turnaround strategy to Chumen. I think it's comprehensive, as Honorable Chabalala alluded to. But I just want to check only one last question. In the light of all the background you have given us that culminated with the crisis we are in, acting CEO, you have highlighted, I think I, at a distance, I can agree with you with all these problems you have alluded to, you listed them there, that culminated, that put us to where we are. I'm just checking now, with the solution that you are bringing in order to try to deal with the problem, do you really see us getting out of this situation to become, to have a profitable, efficient entity, which is SAA, which is having a potential to contribute in the development, as the Mkhwanazi alluded to? And I know I'm asking that question knowing for a fact that this is not just going to be a press of a button and things become. If no, or if no, yes, what issues or what steps do we need to take, and where, as members of this committee, think that we can assist you to sort of get towards a resolution of this problem, of minimizing these problems? Perhaps how long do you think also is going to take you to actually put this entity to its feet again? You can continue, Deputy Minister.
No, thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. Firstly, I think having come before the committee not so many times, where we get compliment, it's worth acknowledging it, Chair. We often get given a hiding for this or that. At least when we get some compliments, as you have done, it means we are responding.
Something, and we are fair.
Something is really happening. Thank you for that. I want to, though, also make a plea. There are questions we could be able to answer. There are others we can't. The board, as we have, I think was in place in 2017, if I'm right, 2016. And certainly, yes, it would have to take full responsibility of the necessary interventions going forward there. But certainly, some of the wrongs that were committed before the board was in place might really be very difficult for the board now to say this is what led to this. This is other than being able to say what are we doing about what we found. Just like where I am sitting, having come to the to this portfolio in, during this sixth administration, there would be a difficulty trying to explain why, for instance, the chair of that board never came to Parliament when summoned to do so. We really may not be able to answer to that. The other is perhaps, yes, information comes to us in different ways, including whether whistleblowers or it could either be employees, etc. The normal treatment of that information is, of course, you've got to find a way to find the legitimate information that comes to you through channels in which it would have been requested. But otherwise, information that's been received in a way not true legitimate platforms. I'm sure even police, they can find all this. They still have to put some questions to people and get answers formally so that then you say this is the position of that. I would really just plead for you, Chair, in that regard. Just help us so that we are able to answer you properly. In respect of, from the shareholder point of view, just as we are looking at ensuring that the airline itself really becomes profitable in the medium to long run, but also we are beginning to look at the consolidation. In fact, parallel to what is happening at SAA in respect of it being sustainable, it's also other activities taking place looking at consolidation, because the shareholder would say, we have these assets. What's the point keeping them the way they are? There's obviously a review taking place, but also it must take account of the laws as we have. It must respect competition issues and other related matters as we are heading in that. Once we have reached some point, we'll come back here to say, this is what we are doing in respect of the airline assets, I mean the aviation assets as we have. Maybe the more operational questions, Chair, we could leave to the team to deal with. Also, Chair, perhaps the other thing that we may plead for some understanding or some approach is that some of the things, the details we must come with here. Yes, we've got to be transparent, but to the extent given that we're also speaking on market-sensitive things, we need not be naked at the same time. There's got to be a way in which we balance that without taking away information here, but also some of the information to the extent we make available here, it's simultaneously available to the competitors. And I think there is no point having a strategy that is out there whilst you are trying to really fix this. It's already known to your competitors. This is what you're doing. I think all of us as patriots, we would want to design an arrangement in which without undermining public scrutiny and accountability, but that should not be at the expense of the future success or possibilities in respect of this. Yes, part of looking at the state of affairs is exploring various avenues, whether it's networks that get forced in practice to improve the viability through optimizing network issues internally and with other airlines. Looking at various forms in which expertise can be sourced. These are things that I think from a shareholder point of view we've given almost like let's explore the environment and find solutions, and when those are crystal then they can be made public. But at the moment it would be difficult to really go as naked on those matters, again not because we don't want to be transparent. Thank you, Chair. Or please don't take away the compliments. At least don't forget that.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I'm going to try and summarize what Mazonia
asked. What I will do is I'll try and summarize what I think were probably four questions, and I'll direct it to the various executive members. The first one was the number of turnaround strategies and the skepticism associated with that. I'll just ask Zooks to address that. And then also that, you know, the acknowledgement that there are massive challenges, and this is the ninth board that we've had, but I suppose that's really a comment. We'll talk about the turnaround strategy that Zooks will address. The next point that Honorable Mazzoni raised is state capture, how it got took root in SAA, the role of the previous chair in that regard, and what actions are in fact being initiated, and also the role of the previous chair in terms of engaging Nico Bazaid and Houghton, withdrawing the consent for the co-chair arrangement of the Emirates. I will ask Advocate Piccoli to address that. And then the merger of Mango, but specifically as far as Mango is concerned, whether it's ever gone to the shareholder for a bailout. Dion will be able to address that in terms of what Mango's current situation is and the difficult trading environment it faces, but whether it's ever been a recipient of a bailout. And then the MOD is for the A340-600, and it's out of line. Life will be addressed by Zooks. And also, I will then hand over to Dion on the semi-privatization of the airline. Are we looking at a potential strategic equity partner? I don't know if I've covered everything else.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Honorable Members. The long turnaround strategy of SAA was first put into play or was crafted in 2013 by the board then, as well as the staff members. I think I alluded to that, and it was verified by different experts into that. So it started from 2013. And what we're doing now, we're accelerating the turnaround strategy. I mentioned at the beginning that we had challenges in implementing the strategy, both from internal and external. So what we're doing, we have looked at ourselves, we said, okay, we haven't been able to implement what has made us not to implement. And we realize that the cumbersome decision-making that we have are stopping us from realizing the goals that we want to achieve. So that's why we have put in the board implementation committee, which is supplemented by the joint implementation committee. And the joint implementation committee has the shareholder in it, so that the decisions that need the shareholder, because ordinarily, if you look at what the acting chair said today, we've got these board committees and sub-board committees. So after ESCO, every decision goes to subcommittee, from subcommittee to the board. Now with the board implementation committee, that meets weekly, it has been empowered by the board to make decisions on behalf of the board. Hence, I said the decisions that are made today in the 3 months that I'm in this office are decisions that would have ordinarily taken 6 to 9 months. So that is what we're trying to do. So this accelerated as a long turnaround strategy. It's the same strategy crafted in 2013, but in between it was not fully implemented. So we try to be restless and implement as quickly as we can the decision. Then talking of the 346 mods, the 346, it is indeed, they are discontinued in terms of the Airbus itself has discontinued the production line of the 346 aircraft. So when they discontinue, of course, the parts are no longer available. So what we've done from SAA, we've taken two of the 346 that we had, that were fully paid, that were in our books, we took them and we have hibernated them. We're taking parts from them. In the event of us not getting them, we go to Europe or to other suppliers or other airlines that have the same parts. It takes longer time. That's why we decided two of our aircraft, we decommission them from flying, and we're taking parts from those aircraft. But the bigger plan, the strategic plan, is that all four engine aircraft will be discontinued. We're looking at only implementing two engine aircraft. Because as you would know, that 15 years ago, when you brought these 600s and the 34300s, they were compatible in terms of the fuel. But with the fuel challenges that we are having today, those aircraft are no longer relevant because the fluctuation of the fuel that I referred to earlier is affecting us now. It's actually hitting the bottom line of SAA as we speak. So in order to deal with that situation, we are trying to phase out all the four engine aircraft and replace them with the two engine aircraft. Hence, in October, we're getting two 359s with a two engine aircraft and later on another two engine aircraft. Then we have 332 with a two engine aircraft, about six of them that we are refurbishing so that we are able to meet the competition because we need to take the competition toe to toe on that. Then talking about the Emirates culture, we pursued it. We are leveraging and getting everything that you can get for it. That partnership is important to it. Then it's not the only one. So each region, we try to have a partner, you know, because a network is very important. SAA is a network carrier. It's very important that you can't fly from point to point because that's where you lose business. So our partnership with Emirates makes us to have onward connection that will be carried by Emirates. Then on the west side in Africa, we've got what you call African World Airlines. That is feeding and defeating for us. So that when we go to Washington or Senegal, which we've just got out of it now, the African World Airline is the airline that feeds and defeats for us. And in Brazil, we also, LATAM was our partner, and they decided unilaterally to get themselves out of the partnership. Now we've got GOL that is working, and it has more network to feed and defeat for us. And that's the strength of running the airline, that you must have a partner that feeds and defeats for you.
Thank you, Chair, and members of the committee. You recall that an integral part of state capture was the erosion and undermining of the institutional capacity of the entire criminal justice system. So I welcome the suggestion from the committee that perhaps we need, or at some stage the committee will have to look at the capacity of the criminal justice sector, Chair. What we've been able to do is to make sure that we centralize the investigation of all matters coming out of SAA. As I said earlier, these were lying all over the place. So in our discussions with the Hawks, we said that all those matters should be attended to by the DPCI for purposes of centralizing these matters so as to get a broader picture, an integrated picture that would tell us exactly what has been happening at SAA. And then also we're following the same strategy when it comes to the prosecution of these matters, that, you know, the NPA is having an integrated approach so that we've got a clear picture of racketeering and the organized crime syndicates operating at SAA. The board has just adopted our fraud and corruption policy. We have just reviewed it and the board has adopted that, including the whistleblowing policy within SAA has been reviewed and has been adopted by the board. We are also looking at lifestyle audit to look at ill-gotten wealth or wealth of individuals that cannot be explained in terms of its source and origin. So this we put in place, and we're looking now at a broader policy which will just look at the integrity of the employees within the organization, because building a culture of ethics starts with an individual and then it contributes to institutional integrity. And this is the function of our Social Ethics and Governance Committee, where we're beginning to create a culture of ethics within the organization. And then also, the cases that we've identified insofar as civil and criminal recoveries. And we are in the process of ensuring that we are putting this in place. We have also been able to identify the actual amount that you are looking at. And then also, in terms of the forensic investigations that have been conducted at SAA, and the matters that are before the Zondo Commission, we have referred some of the matters that implicate former board members within SAA. One of those matters is actually a decision docket, which means that already it is receiving the attention of the NPA. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. In terms of a SEP, it is a consideration. We concerning, as I've indicated, in terms of non-core assets and assets that we believe it will make sense within the company, that we will have a consideration. At the SA level, it's part of the plan, and the shareholder DPE is looking at that, and it will be ultimately a shareholder's decision. I think it's important to mention that it's important that we first get the organization to a stabilization phase before you get the partner, but we will do both in parallel and see if that makes business sense. In terms of Mango, it's also my understanding that they haven't had a bailout. I will confirm it. However, the challenging economic environment has impacted them as well. Safair, as you may know, has put significant capacity in the market, like 57%, reduced their prices by 14%, so it's a tougher market out there. And Comair was also impacted by the technical environment. With that turning around, they should be able to turn around again and be profitable.
Chair, with your permission, then I think we've addressed all Honourable Mazzoni's questions. We can deal with Honourable Mkhwanazi's questions. And again, some of it I think has been addressed in the response to Honourable Mazzoni. So if it's lacking in terms of a response, will you please let us know. But maybe the one that we can talk about is a self-sufficient objective for SAA that Ms. Ramasia talked about, and just the governing party's position in terms of using SOEs for inclusive growth or for driving growth. I'm going to ask Zooks to address that. Then, as far as fraud and corruption is concerned, is there a risk management plan in place? I think it has been addressed by Advocate Piccoli. There's a policy that looks at it, and I think the issue around recovery is the process that he's taken. So, with your permission, that question will then not be addressed now. It's been already answered. And I will talk to you about the question you addressed specifically to me. So, over to Zooks.
Okay. It's the question of a developmental mandate that I'm asking for.
Self-sufficiency objective for SAA that you intend to come in self-sufficiency.
Oh, okay. To be self-sufficient, I think I've addressed it in some way somehow, but in the main, I think I spoke about the fleet that we had. Well, it's not. In fact, the fleet that we are using, for instance, the wide-body aircraft, are not adequate. Basically, are more expensive to run. So we're changing the fleet. We're revisiting all the fleet plan. The difference now is that a fleet plan, to be able to do that, it would have taken years. But now already we've got the permission to go ahead and deal with our fleet constraints, because right now the four-engine fleets are no longer relevant. Most airlines are moving away from dealing with those type of fleets. That is what we're doing, because fleets are key into the airline being stable, because the more your cost of running the fleet, the lesser they are, the better for you. Your return in investment is even better to deal with that. And of course, we're dealing with costs from the transformation, from transformation of set on its own set is our technical services, because there the cost of of looking after our aircraft has been very expensive. So we're dealing again with costs in that area to make sure that even the workers themselves, you know, the shifts, pattern of the workers are re-looked at and see what can we do to deal with that. And also on the procurement, I think Dion spoke a lot lengthily on that, that we're also looking at transforming how we buy everything, how we purchase, so that whatever that we do, we're getting value for money at the for money at the most cost-effective way in dealing with it. So the other thing that we've done, we've given 4 aircraft to Mango, and what it meant is that four aircraft that went to Mango, they didn't go with their staff. So the staff were left in SAA. So we had to deal with that, especially particularly on the cabin crew and on the flight deck side. So what we've done, we looked at how many more flight deck crew do we have and how many cabin crew do we have. So we took them on contract, voluntary contract. So we had 122 pilots extra. So we actually asked them that they must volunteer to go on contract, and some took early retirement. So we looked at everything that we were engaging the unions, that we all arrived at this was the best way to go up around it. With the cabin crew, we had 294, and about 81 only took the severance package and early retirement and all that. So we're still engaging with the union as the way forward. So there's just various means to look at how we're going to save costs and increase revenue. And to increase revenue, I've already mentioned the partnership that we're forming with other airlines to ensure that we don't have to have our metal arriving to each and every place. As long as we have connecting airlines to take our traffic onwards, that's how airlines make money. So that's how we're strengthening ourselves going forward. Then I think employment equity.
Okay. Chair, just you know, the point made by Honorable Konazi was, why do we still think the state should invest in SAA? I think we've had that debate with the shareholder. From 2016, the entity has never been solvent in a sense. It's relied on government guarantees. The net equity deficit, and I speak subject to correction, was to the order of 16 or 17 billion rand. And then it has been subsequently recapitalized by significant sums, but it has ongoing loss of making operations, which meant that the net equity deficit might be somewhat lower now, might be about 13 billion or whatever. But the point is, we have to work on the basis that we can turn the airline around. That's why we have the long-term turnaround strategies and attempt to accelerate it with the establishment of the BIC committee. So all of that matters receive attention. But we've also considered whether it should be whether it should file for business rescue or whether it should be placed in liquidation. That is not a decision the board can make. That is a decision only the shareholder can make. And we've also done an assessment of what it would cost to shut the entity down, and it's a staggering amount. So the board has received a mandate from the shareholder to ensure that we turn around the entity, or try our utmost to turn around the entity, and that is the objective of the turnaround strategy. There are still questions from three other members of the committee. The next one is from Honorable Dlamini, and it's around the 84 high-risk contracts that I think Advocate Piccoli can address, and the issue around procurement of fuel at the prices at which we procure. So I thought Dion Fredericks can address that.
Thank you,
sir.
I'll be quick. The reason why these matters are being referred to the SIU is because the SIU has got special powers in terms of cancelling contracts, in terms of ensuring that there are recoveries. Therefore, they will assist the company in terms of bringing back, you know, stolen money. So that's how they're going to affect us. And then, of course, there are other matters which what you said that are being taken to court already. Other than that, thanks, sir.
Chair, on the fuel, we're actually very efficient on the fuel. At this stage, we probably pay, maybe because we're a smaller operation, cent or so more. to such extent that Mango has now approached us that we need to buy for them as well. So because then the stable will start doing that. If you look in terms of the initiatives that we put in place for the last financial year, the savings on fuel was around about 182 million. So we're getting good traction, and we're going out on a global tender again. Some of the tenders we do with our partners at the end of the day to make sure that we get the best pricing ultimately.
Yes, and I think there are very few questions left. I think one or two were mere pure observations. One was an observation for Advocate Piccoli that whether issues of recovery or successes on matters around forensic, that it should be communicated not via the media, but we should establish a communication channel. I don't think it's really a question, but I think Advocate Piccoli takes note of that. And then the other question from Honorable Shabalala was unskilled people, that we have four unskilled people in our document that we presented, and I just ask Zuf to quickly talk around the circumstances on that matter.
Yes, the four unskilled people that you have, we have in a program of adult basic education that people are allowed to participate in. So I know two of them have participated, but two are not. And it's the employees, SAA some time ago, it has employees that were allowed to get in without a matric long time ago. So these employees are more almost retirement age. So really, it's up to, we don't force them to go and study, but there is a facility for them to participate. So they have gotten involved, two of them, on the adult basic education that is available for them.
Zooks Chair, then the final questions were from you, and I'll just address it to Zooks. The first one is, will we come out of the current negative situation? And the second one, you said, if not, what steps must be taken and what can this committee do to assist us? So I think between Zooks and Dion, they can answer that question.
I think, Chair, Honourable Chair and Honourable Committee, it will be a challenging journey. I think ultimately there's various things that we need to put in place to make sure that we can achieve. First is in terms of speed, and it's ultimately get the right skills in the right place immediately. Secondly, in terms of organisational structures. Additional to that was the board committees which we addressed. That's working well. One of the things that we haven't mentioned yet is that we have a joint implementation committee with our shareholder. TPE is that. That works as well. And that is two parts. Firstly, to share information on the one, but also to make sure that acceleration take place. If we look in terms of the organization itself, cost initiatives, we need to accelerate and take that out quickly. In this business, if your cost is more than your revenue, you have a challenge, but we can see many airlines internationally, when we've done the benchmark for the turnaround plan, it's available. We've spoken about fleet. You need to turn the fleet around as quickly as possible, get the right product, because it's all about product and product aligned to pricing at the end of the day, to make sure that we can achieve that. And then also maintenance, as we've indicated, we're addressing the maintenance issues from the technical side to make sure that we achieve that. The fuel, I've spoken about the fuel. IT systems is critical. We're implementing IT systems to make sure that customers, as I've indicated previously, can select what they want. Currently, we don't have the systems to do that, but that's where it's moving towards. You need to have the required apps to do that. And ultimately, overall, support from this committee as well as the shareholder is how do we enable significantly quicker decision making, specifically how do we work together, but also how does the government from their side support the airline in terms of flying SAA as well. Thanks.
Thanks. We'll go back to you, Deputy Minister, sort of round off so that we, yeah.
No, no, thank you. Thank you very much, Chair.
I'm not willing to take other questions.
No, thank you. Thank you so much, Chair. I think it is really work in progress, as the team is indicating, between DPE as well as the SAA. There's a lot of collaboration and working on ensuring that the accelerated the long-term turnaround strategy is successfully implemented. We are indeed committed to that, and again, understanding fully the environment in which the rest of the fiscus is, and the fact that the Minister of Finance has really made clear that there won't be these constant bailouts. We're really working within that mode to get the airline in good shape. Thank you.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. Honourable Members, I think we reach the end of the session, but I need to thank the Deputy Minister, the Acting Director General, the Chairperson of the Board, the Acting CEO, CFO, and our Advocate, Pikoli, for gracing us here and providing us with this comprehensive information. And I think as members of the committee, yes, they have alluded to, I think they are grateful that you have provided them at least with more comprehensive information, so that whatever we engage, at least we do understand or we do know what are you doing there. And on behalf of them, I thank you, all of you. But I need to say, we might have coming from different political parties, but we've got one objective and also one understanding of the fact that the situation we find ourselves in, the major contributing factor is corruption and the Guptas, who happen to be the attackers of the entire South African nation in all the state entities, including government departments. Therefore, we are all necessarily here trying to rescue the country or rebuild the country from that sad experience. I know some other people might think that we have different solutions to the problems. I heard the Honorable Mazur said we must not see her as some kind of a person who thinks that everything can be resolved through privatization. But I don't think there is any wrong in the light of this situation we find ourselves into. There is no wrong or right kind of intervention here. We need to collectively come up with a solution as a nation. And the nation is not coming from the African National Congress only. It comes from the broader society, including all political parties. Therefore, I don't think anyone to feel like when he has a piece of proposal and seeing some kind of an uncomfortability on the other side with that proposal must start to be worried. Having me sharing this coming from my background, I don't think that there is one solution to this problem. One has to think beyond his ideological orientation. The situation we are put in is abnormal. That's my understanding of the situation. And an abnormal situation cannot just be resolved by one particular kind of ideological orientation. No, we have to think out of the box. I agree fully with those kind of people. The situation we are in, I don't think any of us ever thought that we'll ever be where we are today. Therefore, we need to be more collective in our approach and to be tolerant to each other at the same time. With all those words, I thank you, SAA, for coming. We will be calling you time and again. Don't think that because you presented with this comprehensive
and we say that we're happy. Yes, we're happy with the input, but we'd like you to take us through in the process of execution also. Yeah. Thank you so much. The members can remain behind the pit.
It's still crazy how you can stay in the room and go to my feet. You become so accustomed to it because you are so tired to not doing that. Just imagine, even if you're 7 in a company, like seeing a CEO in a company, a company no 7 is a big deal. I want to be a I want to be a humble number. And when
you bounce almost every time,
honorable members, we've got only 5 minutes to quickly do this. We have another meeting at 1. Can we get the minutes quickly from the secretary? Because the previous
members, we have distributed the minutes of the 4th of September.
We're talking about two sets of those minutes.
Yeah.
I've read, my reading has shown that they are the true reflection of what transpired in those two meetings. But I can't move both of them concurrently. So you rather than say which one you are calling, and then I move.
We are on the 4th of September now.
Chair, I then move that the minutes be adopted.
Okay. Any second? Okay. Honorable Lamin?
I seconded. Chairperson.
Okay.
sibane nge-meeting ngo-1 kwindawo
We agree with the other committee. Okay. Thank
you.
Now it's the program. In the program, 3rd of October.
Honourable members, the program for the third term, next term is starting on the 6th of October, from the 6th of October until the 6th of December. Primarily, on the first 2 weeks of the third term, we are expected to be dealing with the budgetary review and recommendations report. So you'll see that our briefings will be emanating from the Auditor General will brief us on the audit outcomes of all the state-owned enterprises and the Department of Public Enterprises before we engage them on their annual reports and financial statements. So that part, that is more mandatory for us as a committee to deal with that, because we need to, by the 16th of October, we should be adopting a report on the performance of the companies and the department to prepare for the medium-term budget policy statement. But more necessarily is that during that time of the term, all state-owned enterprises and the departments have tabled their annual reports, but they're supposed to table by the 31st of August. They've all tabled. Not all of them have tabled. ESCOM and the department have tabled. We're not sure if others will be tabling very soon PLO. So we will be scheduling the meetings for the annual reports. But those particular meetings, as they come for the annual reports, the committee can engage the companies on any other governance or related matters as and when they come for the annual report presentation. And then the only week so far for now that has been given for us to do oversight is the last week of the term, which is from the 3rd to the 6th of December. That is the last week of the... Yes. So if anything changes in the programming of Parliament, where they're saying committees are given more time to go on oversight, then we'll be able to change the program again to allow for oversight. And then, or as and when the committee see it fit that on this particular day, in fact, let's rather go on oversight, then we make an application to the House Chairperson, Mr. Frolic, to say that the committee would actually like to go and do oversight on this particular day instead of coming here. So as and when the committee takes that decision, then we do the application. Thanks, sir.
Honorable Commander?
Chair, Do you expect us to agree on the program or note the program? Please, if you may guide us.
Yeah, no. The program is brought to the committee for adoption. Yes.
I've read the program in conjunction with this. I don't know what we call it, but a major program that is parliamentary program. It coincides, so because I was looking at the dates, the availability and all that, on the basis of that, with the understanding that any changes in that parliamentary program will in fact affect this one. So I think I move that we agree on it because it coincides with that major program.
Okay. Any second? I would assume. Okay.
We are second chairperson.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you, honourable members. The meeting is closed.